Bluegrass Jam Along is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, each and every one built from the sound up in Austin, Texas. This episode is also brought to you by Peghead Nation, the home of roots music instruction. If you want to improve your playing, join me and thousands of other pickers getting better every day at pegheadnation.com.
Hi, this is Brian Sutton, and you're listening to Bluegrass Jam Along, the podcast for anyone and everyone who plays bluegrass.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a really special edition of Bluegrass Jam Along. This is the 100th episode, and to celebrate, we've got a fantastic interview coming up with Brian Sutton, the one and only Brian Sutton, and it was a pleasure to record, and I really hope you enjoy it. But first, I just want to say thanks to each and every one of you who's downloaded this and jammed along and sent me feedback and told their friends about it and interacted with me on social platforms, sent me messages. When I started this back in March, sort of 6 months ago, I had no idea it would get this far or be this much fun or be such a cool project to be involved with, and it's just been a pleasure. So thanks to each and every one of you. It's a real thrill to do this. I also want to thank a few people who've been really supportive of the podcast, particularly Alan, Bob and Paul at the Facebook Bluegrass Guitar Group and all the members there who've just supported me throughout all of this and engaged it all and just welcomed me in and made me feel like part of the family, which has been amazing. Thanks, guys. Everybody at Mandolin Cafe, which I've been a member of for longer than I care to remember. Such a great resource, such a great place to go for information. Thanks to you guys too. All my fellow students on Brian Sutton's Artist Works flat pick guitar course, they're just a great bunch to chat to, a great bunch to hang out virtually with, and a great community to be part of, and that's sort of testament to Brian as much as anything, but we'll be talking about that a bit later. I want to thank John Lawless at Bluegrass Today for supporting the podcast right from the start. Thanks, John. It meant a lot. And finally, I just want to thank Zan, my latest contributor through the website. People have been supporting this podcast and it's been lovely to see, so thank you. But that's it. This is not going to be a long speech. I just wanted to thank a few people and just let you know how much I appreciate everything people have done. So without any further ado, we're going to get on to the Brian Sutton interview. Now, I'm going to presume if you're listening to a podcast about playing bluegrass, you've got an idea who Brian Sutton is. If you don't, Brian Sutton is a Grammy-winning guitar player who has 10 times won the IBMA Guitarist of the Year award. And to give you a sense of what that means, if you look at the last 15 years of that award, it's easier to spot the years he hasn't won it than the years he has. It's like looking at a list of the French Open tennis men's singles winners over the past 15 years and looking for the years where it doesn't say Rafael Nadal. It's an incredible achievement and it's testament to an incredible musician. But he's just as committed and talented a teacher as he is a guitarist, and that's one of the things we talk about in the interview. He's been doing it for over a decade now and goes deep into what he can do to help people be better musicians, and I think this will be a good listen for you whatever instrument you play. It's not really an interview about guitar, it's an interview about being a musical human being and the things you can bring to that to give you a better experience. It was a huge joy to record. Brian is great to talk to about this stuff. So I will leave it at that and we will go on with the interview. So enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed making it, and I will let Brian speak for himself. So Brian Sutton, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Matt.
What I thought would be great is, and so I guess most people won't know this, but Brian is also my guitar teacher. I'm an Artist Works student on the flat pick course, and have been for about a year now. And I think the thing that I was partly surprised by, but just really impressed by, was that the depth of your commitment and insight and sort of engagement with teaching is as deep as your commitment to being a musician. And I hadn't expected that. And it's a fascinating thing. And I'd really like to talk a bit from that perspective as well.
Sure.
There's a great podcast you did with Everyone Loves Guitar that covers a lot of your career, and that was done so well. I think I might just stick a link to that in the show notes, and we can talk about some other stuff. It's that teaching thing I'm really interested in. I wondered, there's maybe a starting point, your approach is very much based around a human rather than a musician and a human expressing themselves through music. And I wondered what your sort of thoughts were on the role of a teacher in the modern world where all the information is out there.
Right. I have, you know, it's sort of a collection of things, basically, but we tend to dive into the, you know, the nuts and bolts of here's an instrument, here's all the notes, here's a piece of music to look at or a song to learn. And there's, at the end of the day, a lot of what I call doing music, kind of activity that goes on. And I think we all do it, and it is a natural part of the equation, of the recipe, if you will. But I find that oftentimes in learning and in a lot of teaching, it kind of stops there. And what I've learned about me as a musician is, along with doing music, the doing music feels better, sounds better, is more rewarding when I am working to also be musical. And that also leads to, you know, very kind of specific things to work on and to acknowledge and to, you know, feel like that you're improving around as far as, you know, that the depth of understanding and awareness and what an experience is. Because I do think that no matter what you do to learn more songs, learn the guitar, you know, licks, whatever it is, there's still this hole that's left as far as what's it really mean or what's it feel like when I choose to go play this around certain people and suddenly I'm nervous and I have all these levels of, again, kind of human experience and specific emotion that, you know, what do we do with that? And again, a lot of people just get frustrated or they create limits. I can't play this fast or I can't do what this person does. I can't improvise. And I tend to think when we really ultimately combine work to be musical along with the doing music, we're able to hit everything. It's more comprehensive ultimately. And so again, I've worked on all that with me and I felt like for me to be a teacher, it's only honest for me to try to cover as much of that as possible.
And I think that word honest is a really interesting one, because one of the things that I've appreciated most, like from you, but also just from the general bluegrass world, is there's not a strict divide between who is a musician and who is the audience. And so there seems to be some honesty and some, like, you know, a simple example of this was I posted something on a guitar Facebook group the other day saying I was playing the same bit over and over again to try and get it into my fingers. And you jumped on and went, yeah, I spent a lot of time on that as well. Mm-hmm. There's the idea that people can see that you've been where they are and we're all on a musical journey. We're just at different stages of it. I think it's a really powerful thing because people forget and they just compare themselves to where they want to get to.
Yeah. That's part of that common sort of limiting stopping place. You're just not quite understanding what everybody deals with, whether you're someone that's been doing something at a relatively high level for a lot of years or somebody that picked up a guitar a month ago. Obviously that's two different spots of the journey, but the technical parts of the journey and the human experience level are still very much the same. I'm still very much the same, you know, kind of nervous person standing on the side of a stage as I was when I was in my 20s or teens, you know, and that's one of the cool things about working on a lot of these more human elements or experiential elements is that, again, you never really learn them, but you just learn strategies to help deal with things like performance pressures or anxieties or even just sort of accepting the beauty of what the journey can be, meaning it's not about a set lick number or tune number. I mean, there's just always something more to learn, and that's not to be oppressive like we'll never get it, but if that's exciting, that's really, I mean, I think ultimately the most rewarding part about it is the fact that we never, there's nothing really to just plant the flag and say, I've done it all. There's never that part of the journey.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's easy for people in my position and people learning instruments to look at a player like you or, I don't know, Chris Thiele or whoever, and feel like that you've reached the destination, you're there and you're kind of wandering around enjoying the view. And just hearing Chris Thiele talk about his recent album and saying he'd realized that he'd spent years and years as a musician learning and focusing on the instrument. He'd never really thought that hard about how he sang and thinking, right, I need to go and spend some time on that. And there is always another thing. And a new level of depth or a new level of difference.
Yeah. I mean, I went through the same thing of just feeling like for years and years I was playing everybody else's songs because I was, and that I'd sort of put it off. I think, I don't know how Thiele would answer this too, but I know in my situation, because I was a professional and busy and kind of relatively, you know, I don't want to say successful, but just had consistent work playing everybody else's songs. And so it was, I was to jump into my own thing, whether it be instrumental writing or certainly lyric writing and singing in front of people. I mean, that was completely the deep end, the scary, the, you know, so vulnerable and such a risky thing to do. But that's, you know, I felt a tremendous amount of growth from that. And that's just, you know, again, all in the last 4 or 5 years.
It's that, the album, that I think it's the More I Learn, which is an album that I love on all sorts of levels, but it's full of you because it's your stories and your, and the instrumental tracks, all of it, it feels very personal and very like centered and from a human being rather than from a musician.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, back to the earlier part of the discussion, I think that's what's ultimately so hard for most just aspiring students of something like flat pick guitar is, well, you know, I can't be me. I'm going to do all I can to just sort of hopefully learn a cool David Greer lick. And again, that's just such a limit. I mean, we all have something to say. And then back to the honesty thing, back to the willingness to be vulnerable, you know, again, that's the hard stuff for any of us, but so worth it when you can find some kind of angle, whether it's songwriting or just, again, like an artist works, just to see people just submit a video, you know, which, you know, on paper looks pretty easy, but when you know, we all know what it's like as soon as you turn the red light on or turn the camera on and you know, it's just a different environment.
And Brian Sutton's going to be watching it, you know, that's the thought goes through everybody's head. And it is, it's scary for people. And I think the interesting bit about all of it is it is that journey. And for some people, just getting to the point of submitting a VE might be a massive, massive journey. Some people might find that easy. But the phrase you used earlier was having something. We've all got something to say. Or we need to feel like we've got something to say. I think that's true. Music is ultimately a language that is there to help us communicate with other people. And if you just learned a bunch of licks.
That's the tricky thing about bluegrass is that it's not a set repertoire, but there are standards and there are just sort of, you know, a lot of people that go to their jam sessions do play the same thing over and over again. And you kind of get into this kind of rote way of doing things. And again, I think that's part of my role as a teacher expose those things, but just to kind of call those out and say, okay, you know, like even when somebody on Artist Works or in a workshop, you know, I can sort of tell when something, you know, somebody plays a solo and it's real kind of lick heavy or very scalar, or, you know, you can sort of hear people's safety mechanisms, you know, when they're soloing. I can hear them in me, you know, I know when I'm doing it. And so it's good, to, you know, just kind of recognize where these walls are, because when you start breaking those down, then you, even as, again, as it's weird at first, you can start feeling stuff that's unique, stuff that's, you know, not from Tony Rice or Doc Watson, but maybe some kind of wonderful little mesh of that stuff, plus some kind of new thing. And again, that's the exciting thing, is that there's just always something else to say around the corner. It never totally goes away.
We'll be right back with you just after this. We'll be right back with you just after this. Collings Guitars has been a long-time supporter of the bluegrass community, from collaborating with artists to sponsoring festivals big and small. And now, by sponsoring Bluegrass Jam Along. Handmade in Austin, Texas, every Collings guitar and mandolin that leaves the shop is built from the sound up, and the team love seeing a Collings in the hands of players of all levels, from local musicians to world-renowned pickers. Visit collingsguitars.com for more. This episode is also brought to you by Peghead Nation, the home of roots music instruction. With 65 streaming video courses for guitar, mandolin, banjo, fiddle, dobro, bass and ukulele from some of the leading names in acoustic music, Peghead Nation has something for every picker. You'll learn the tunes and techniques you need to join in at jams and play the music you love, plus advanced techniques like improvisation, theory and ear training. Your first course is just $20 per month and you can add more for $10 a month. Sign up for any course and get your first month free with the promo code JAMALONG, all one word. Join thousands of other players, including me, who are advancing on their instruments and having more fun playing the roots music they love at pegheadnation.com. Totally. And how does that feel to sort of start dismantling people's safety mechanisms a little bit when you're not in the room with them. You sort of have to send advice and be kind, but also tell them the truth. Mm-hmm. And then you don't know how they're going to take it necessarily.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, I would just hope that at the end of the day, again, me as a person is going to work to deliver that kind of message in a way that's encouraging, not discouraging. You know, feedback is necessary. Constructive criticism is still criticism, but it's hopefully constructive first. And I think too, I mean, part of when I've been around better teachers on my own, you know, there's some kind of like, and when you do this, this is what you're going to be able to experience. And so again, within all that, there's like, then you're judging some sort of healthy challenge. Like what's realistic? What's, you know, we're not going to just break you down and suddenly, you know, in 5 seconds now start sounding like Kenny Smith, but what's one thing we can work on? Again, that's one of the things I felt like I've evolved with as far as teaching is being able to talk about improvisation, because it's really hard when it comes to, you know, personal choices and that kind of thing. And what are all the little mechanisms in play to make a solo happen and examine all that kind of stuff. And but ultimately, again, find ways to work on improvisation that kind of pushes all the right buttons in all the right ways. And then, again, just jump into some kind of sense of this is the work we do and this is what you can expect. That's one of the things I always try to say when we're performing or improvising, is that you can expect that improvising is not going to feel like, hey, I know what's going to happen. You have to accept from the onset with improvisation, the whole spirit of improvisation is what I call kind of embracing this chaos. Yeah. I mean, and you learn to love it. You know, it's like, I have no idea what's around the corner, but the process to kind of explore and be real playful. Again, John Hartford always says, play with the music. I love that. So that healthy, playful attitude that you try to encourage, that's not about, you know, let's furrow our brows and just bang on this till it's, you know, forged into submission. It's like, that's, you know, the real healthy attitude is just to, let's learn to let go. Let's accept and let go. And again, that doesn't mean that it's easy, but it's certainly in the end, a healthier strategy than continuing to pound or just pile lick upon lick and things like that.
Yeah. And I guess it is very much like having a conversation. And when we get together with our friends, we do have the same conversations over and over again because they're easy and they're common and they bind us together. But exploring ideas and being able to say things out loud to see how they sound and whether you believe them or not, and have a truly free conversation. I mean, to be able to improvise at that level takes time and confidence.
Yeah. And I think one of the beautiful things about fiddle tunes is that on a sort of music theory side, they are at heart relatively simplistic. And they are great launch pads for recognizing here's a set little structure and a melody that's fairly accessible at its core. Then let's just see what happens when we twist some things around or fill this space one way this time and another way another time. And they're just, again, just such great vehicles for, you know, always noticing something different. Again, that's part of that spirit, is just always you know, having fun in a very playful, what's around the corner, let me explore, let me just try stuff out and see what happens.
I think one of the things that sort of surprised me getting into playing bluegrass guitar was the idea you can do that with your rhythm playing too. Like, mm-hmm. I sort of thought that the rhythm playing is the rhythm and the improvisation is the lead, and that's how, but you hear good people play and the rhythm is just as much of a journey and an improvisation as the tune.
Yeah, we tend to separate one from the other, like you're saying. I think a lot of people just say, here's me just learning the chords of the song. And I think it also stems from a point, I don't want to mess up, so I'm just going to, you know, really sort of plant these chords in the right spot. But I do think we forget that that's the song too, just as much as the melody is. And when you have worked on some of both, and you know, I always encourage, you know, on a rhythmic front or an improvisational front, to sort of internalize that core version of the melody that you can kind of sing along in your head while you're playing the chords, and just the rises and falls, the ebbs and flows, the spaces around that core melody. You know, that's, again, that's where those are the spots for that are ripe for, you know, trying various things out, little walking runs or extra strums or a cross picking kind of moment. Again, there's when you learn to look for the opportunities, then you start seeing more of the opportunities.
Yeah, and it is that idea of even with the tune itself, what the core tune is, like coming to this as a British guy who didn't grow up around bluegrass or much American music at first at all, just hearing these tunes and starting to try and learn them and go, well, what is the actual tune? And everybody plays it slightly differently. Each book's got a different version in it. And at first that's quite frustrating and quite intimidating. And in time it's massively liberating because there's scope for your version of Whiskey Before Breakfast and somebody else's version.
Yeah, which is, again, what I love about the fact that when I say literally with a song like Whiskey Before Breakfast, you have 100 guitar players, you're going to hear 100 versions of Whiskey Before Breakfast. But the reason that it's good to notice that is that what you can gather from all that information is that there is still something similar. And what is that? What is that core kind of connective scaffolding or structure or the essential sequence of notes is what I call it, that ultimately define that from some other song. And when you can locate that, again, it's like discovering the skeleton. And then you can kind of, throw different bits of this and that and the other thing and on top of it. And again, that's back to the improvisational challenges to feel these goals hit where you sort of feel you, but also feel the song being communicated. And that's for me, that's kind of the target, at least with fiddle tune improvisation, to feel like I am kind of informed by that melody, but also completely engaging as much as I can. And that's this sort of healthy, reactive improvisational mindset. It's not easy, but it's worth working on.
And an exciting thing to sort of be in a moment of having a go at doing it and seeing where you end up. I think I might've made this up, but I feel like I've heard you said recently that, the three elements really of approaching a song is the instrument, the song, and you. And each of those has a different thing to contribute. And, some people focus on one or two of those bits.
Yeah, I think, again, from where we started, the guitar is such a constraint and such a challenge just to kind of feel like we build a certain fluency and understanding and just, ability around the fretboard. And then, learning the songs, the repertoire. But again, I always come back to that. There's the experience of you noticing these things happening in real time, and then what does that feel like? That's, what is reaction about, and how do you know? How do you even know to be aware? And again, when I started being able to open up those doors for me, I felt like everything got deeper and better, and more rewarding ultimately. And again, as a teacher, that's my hope ultimately, is that just knowing that those doors are there and that they can be opened, I think that's the goal for me.
And do you find that the things people come to you to learn are? Did you find my example of this was my very first B that I submitted. I sent it. I think it was Whiskey Before Breakfast actually, and thinking right, Brian's going to teach me some cool stuff. And the first thing he went was like, nice, move your arm a bit, it'll sound better. And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. Like, I got what I needed, not what I wanted. And so I spent a week or two moving my arm a bit, and it sounded better. And now all my playing sounds better, and it sounds very simple. But I could have watched videos or DVDs or read books for years and learned all the licks and not got that.
Right. I think that, to the beautiful kind of marriage of you and your experience and the guitar is the fact that, again, I'm filling my brain full of things to say, and it's all wanting to come out at the same time. One of my goals as a teacher is also to help people do what they already do better. And what does better mean? Better is tone, better is groove. Before we talk about, all the fancy improvisational opportunities or licks or variations or whatever, let's really try to understand what you operating the instrument can feel like when things are optimized, when you're really communicating inherently this pocket and groove with good tone. Let's go there first. I always feel like that's kind of goal number one. Like what I was saying earlier, that without the improvisational part of the discussion, just to the core of just what kind of sound is being created when any one of us sit with a guitar. Again, that's really unique. A lot of us do feel like I want to sound like Tony Rice, and I've been down that road a lot in my career and come to a certain acceptance of like, well, I'm not going to sound like Tony Rice, I'm going to sound like me. And so can I optimize me? And that's the answer to that is yes. And so again, those are doors that I like to open. And they're generally more accessible doors to open with students than, all right, let's go imagine whiskey before breakfast 50 different ways and see what happens. Because I think the positive feedback of feeling a better sound and feeling at least more, I don't want to say in control, but just trusting or knowing that a groove is more predictable, where again, fiddle to the simplistic nature of fiddle tunes, can be kind of boiled down to a pretty simple churn of eighth notes, right? That's what we talk about. And if I can feel that again as part of my core information, that does create a settled experience upon which I know for me at least my improvisation is better. If I'm not settled, the ideas that come out of me, how I'm communicating is not settled. It's tight and frenetic and kind of scared sounding. But if I can be more settled and feel settled, feel more calm, the ideas that come out are better. So it all kind of feeds on each other when it comes to putting all that together, the guitar, the songs, and the human experience.
Yeah. And I guess confidence to explore comes from trusting what you'll bring into the table and knowing that things aren't like, you know, you know your way around the fretboard, and you're not going to get halfway up the neck and go, oh, now where do I go from here? Or yeah. You're not, you know, just trusting that there's some stuff that you know and you've controlled and you've learned and you've internalized. And then the rest of it is what happens on the moment, in the moment on the day, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, to sort of any kind of teaching strategy, that's what I've learned is as simple as you can make certain things, the better off. So that's why, again, anybody that comes through my door at ArtistWorks is going to be playing a lot of one string with a metronome for a little while, just to try to unpack what true quality, not necessarily in a melody, but just like I call it, the how we play, the mechanics and techniques as it relates to a groove that communicates or a feel and notes that are optimized. You know, I think we can do that with one note. And if nothing else, just for the experience of it, and again, to your term, confidence, I like to use competence first. You know, competence breeds more confidence. So if we can start laying the foundations for some kind of competency, that's what we trust. And then when we trust, then we feel confident about what we know that we've worked on and feel competent around.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going on a bit of a journey with that myself at the moment. I've kind of realized through submitting a couple of E's to you talking about improvisation that I've realized that I'm capable of playing a groove and I'm capable of generating ideas, but actually I just don't know my instrument as well as I ought to. And so I go to places and I run out of, you know, knowing where to get back or where to go. And then it doesn't matter how good your ideas or your groove is if you run out of notes.
Yeah, sure. But I think the powerful thing there is that you are, through some self-discovery, coming to terms with where the work needs to happen. I think for a lot of people, again, it's like, what am I going to be frustrated about today? The lack of, well, that solo sucked, but at least my tone was terrible. You know, it's if we can at least kind of just pinpoint some healthy things to work on. And again, I'm the same way I'm pretty confident even in my ability to work myself around the fretboard and get out of weird little improvisational corners. And I've accepted my sound. I'm not going to sound like Tony Rice, but it's going to sound like me. And it's going to be all right. And I can generally settle into a groove, but what I work on, what I notice is the main thing is this true trust of that moment. And I still just, you know, to this day kind of battle these moments in my improvisation where it's not about, I don't know the fretboard, but it's, I don't trust it as much. I don't trust me as much as I need to, especially like in performance moments. So again, we've all got our stuff. But my point of this was just, as you just unpack a lot of this with regards to just how you're moving, how you're sounding, what is the guitar, what is the song, what is you? You know, somewhere in there, as you learn more about that, you can pinpoint a little more specifically what are the good things to work on.
Yeah, and I think sort of looping back to something you said earlier about sort of realistic expectations about where you can get to and where, you know, how the order that can happen in. I think you're right. I've sort of come to an understanding of where I need to put some work in. And there's an old British joke, and I'm sure there's an American equivalent of it, but, you know, somebody's driving around some lanes in the middle of the countryside and totally lost and stops and says, oh, how do I get to so-and-so? And the person goes, well, wouldn't start from here. Like, we can only start from here. And that that's sort of a lesson in itself. And so many of those simple lessons apply to music as much as they do life. Because ultimately they're the same thing.
Yeah, sure. And you don't know what you don't know. And I think the more you spend at the life lesson of just acknowledging that and doing something to sort of amend that, I think that's part of just the expand of the life journey. That's a good one for all of us.
And I think that what you don't know is, I think at first you get a sort of false confidence from realizing you know something. And then we get giddy, we make a load of progress really quickly. And then all of a sudden you dive right in and realize what you don't know. And a lot of people, I'm not going to mention any names, but somebody posted on the shout box on the Artistwork site the other day, just you had a musical experience and sort of been slightly deflated by it because she realized how much she didn't know. Mm-hmm. And everybody immediately rallied around. It was like, no, you're doing really well. You're great. You're on a journey and you'll get there. And it's true, isn't it? But I think we all have those moments of just sort of coming up against the cliff face and going, oh, that's a long way up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's humility, there's honesty, there's just recognizing that. I mean, I don't try to make things so sort of competitive feeling, but I know that there are quote unquote better guitar players than me. But again, what I hope is to not, again, kind of feel any kind of oppression around that. But like, what is that this other player has that I would like to feel? Again, I've done that a lot for me, where it's not about let me go learn their solo. But if I look at a guy like Julian Lodge, who for me is at this sort of, it exists in this stratosphere of musicians that hold a guitar, and I look at him and I've been around him. He's such a sweet guy, and his attitude is so open and inviting. And so that's the lesson, you know, be open, inviting, because I mean, it affects Julian in some way. His playing is again, a lot of that, what I was saying earlier, there's this freedom and trust there, that again, just to hear him talk about it, it's not that he's got some kind of superhero ability. He will admit to his humanity as much as any of us. And that's good. So, understand. The cliff you mentioned is basically our making.
Yeah, and I think it's the path to the top is usually a long, gentle incline. You just got to keep going up. It's generally not a cliff. It's just you've got to put a foot forward and get a little bit higher up every day, haven't you? But I think, yeah, definitely that idea that there are people. So I did, you know, one of the biggest struggles I had starting this podcast was the idea that how am I qualified to do a bluegrass guitar podcast, because I'm learning this stuff myself. And I just sort of talked myself around and went, like, somebody else could play these things better than you, but you will bring to it what you bring to it, and people might respond to that, and they might not, and that's okay. Just do an honest version of it that is you. And
yeah,
you know, it's been a brilliant journey to go on, and I've learned a lot, and I'm having conversations like this as a result, which is, you know,
yeah,
a real privilege.
I mean, there's a lot of my career that bears to that same, I'm not sure that I'm ready for this kind of feeling. I mean, the whole Artistwork thing was that way, where I was a student of their first school site, and just really loved it and thought this would be cool for bluegrass. And, just one thing led to another, and I eventually found myself with the opportunity to do this, but kind of scared to death about it too, because I had a lot of general thoughts about a lot of what, you know, the core of what I'm doing now still is, but just had never articulated that a lot. The format works, but it's just, especially at the onset of building kind of what we call the curriculum, it's just hard to know how people are going to respond to it. So anyway, the point is that was for me, as a couple of things in my career as a musician have sort of represented, I don't know if I'm ready for this, but it seems like a really cool thing to do. So, okay. I was telling somebody that yesterday. I mean, the very first recording session that I ever got hired to play, the producer called the night before and said, do you play mandolin? And I said, sure. And I owned a mandolin, but never really played it more than, you know, a second or two at a time. So it was me the night before the session, making sure the thing played in tune and had strings and figured out where G, C, and D and other chords. And all this kind of stuff was going to be, and here I go. And I think that's, you know, maybe some of us are wired a little more to dive into stuff like that than not. But I think for me, it's just recognizing an opportunity, and again, a certain willingness. It's going to be okay. I've done a lot of learning on the job, and same thing with ArtistWorks, where, again, I'm thankful that I have been able to use some of this downtime to go out there and refilm a lot of the sort of core curriculum that feels like it's more representative of where I am and where the site is after 10 years of doing it. So, you know.
Yeah, because I guess your relationship with teaching and your view of how to teach must have changed over 10 years.
Yeah, again, I came out of the gate with a lot of the basic, again, like I said, basic thinking, basic philosophy, if you will, kind of in place, but just, you know, like a lot of things, I just hadn't done it a lot. So I've got 10 years now of experience of talking about this stuff, and feel like, you know, if somebody signs on to ArtistWorks, they're going to see thousands of these little conversations. And then this other whole part of the site, which is sort of the curriculum, all the exercises and core videos that, you know, just right now, the way I'll put it is that I'm seeing more opportunity for connecting the good conversations in the VEs with exactly what's in the curriculum. And so that's what I've aimed to kind of amend a bit or create more healthy connection there, which right now it's just my general efforts 10 years ago, which were, again, some well-meaning things, but as I've evolved and gotten better at it, again, what is coming will reflect that.
And I think that talks a bit to your point about taking opportunities and not being afraid to. My day job is I work in the world of tech, and I'm not a technical person, but I work around technical people. And there's a definite attitude of just get something out there. They call it minimum viable product. Just get something out, let people use it, see what works, see what doesn't, and fix the bits that don't. And if by doing it partway through, the people are using it for an entirely different thing than you thought they would, go with it. You know, and it's just that learning on the job.
I've noticed that about lots of tech-based stuff, and you know, whether it's our cell phones or what. And it's interesting to think about that as an analogy, because I inherently don't agree with that, but I'm coming more and more around to that idea of, what did you call it?
Minimum viable product.
Minimum viable product. That's a good thing. Cause I think that, I mean, it speaks to the, your core intent can be the same, but I think to the guitar part, maybe if we just feel like we're never quite ready to go to a jam session, and we feel like we've got to learn, you know, six more songs before I can go to a jam session, you know, really a healthy jam is always going to provide you for some opportunity to play something you don't know, or to your other point, where no matter what you do to learn a particular song, it's probably going to be played in a different tempo or maybe even a different key than you've learned it when you go to a jam session. So that's cool. That's,
anyway. And you may learn your half dozen tunes and make it to the jam and they don't play any of them. At least by going that time, you found out what they do play, and you can go home and learn them. There's always something to be learned from interacting.
That's true.
Yeah. So it definitely feels like with the ArtistWorks thing, you're sort of maybe not like a version two, but definitely deepening the connection of some of the work and building on it, and sort of strengthening some of the bits that you feel have been thrown up through just the lessons interacting with students over 10 years. In terms of you as a kind of a musician, a recording artist, a writer, are you sort of looking to continue in the sort of general vein of the more I learn? Is that where your sort of heart is at the moment?
It's weird for me. That record and a part of the one that I did before it called Into My Own kind of represented me dipping my toe deeper and deeper into these sort of unknown waters of just honesty and vulnerability. And not to say that I'm done with that, but that was such a process for me to do all the, write the songs, put the record together, had a band and toured with a band for a little over a year. On the sort of music business front, it was kind of weird because I got to the point where, okay, I've built this sort of machine and it's off the ground and it's sort of operating at a, again, it was a minimum viable product, minimally viable product, and it was working. You know, it was, I was getting gigs and playing festivals and And as a professional, I'm thinking, how can I fit this into my balance? My life is always about balance of recording sessions. And at the time was Hot Rise touring and other sort of things that just tend to pop up. Like now it's the Bela Fleck thing. And do I have the bandwidth to pursue like this Brian Sutton band energy full tilt or half tilt? And the way the music business works, especially in the world of bluegrass, is that it takes a lot of touring to break even. You know, it's not a deep pocket world for most people that are out there. And so I felt like this was a goal met to get this thing going off the ground, working. I'm standing in front of people, you know, night after night, doing the touring, being a band leader. And it was great. I'd put that off for a lot of years. But all that to say, you know, I got to this point of like, well, how do I now want to keep this going? I think there's a lot of things with whatever anyone's business kind of goals are, where it's like, okay, I've done all this initial work and now it's there. And now what am I going to do to just keep it going? And it was in that trying to process, what do I have to do now to keep this going? Or like I said earlier, involve this now into the balance of these other things that sometimes even just with what I've already got going on is hard. Sort of feels like three full-time jobs sometimes. And so I just came to this realization that, you know, at least for where I wasn't inspired to just continue to pursue that. And again, not that I'm done, but I did feel that I just wanted to kind of take some time off from that kind of energy and also not try to push or force the idea that, okay, I've got this new record and new material for when that record came out. And now I've got to follow it up with better or more. And I've just decided to just not push it and not force anything and just see what happens a little more naturally and organically. And then, you know, so that was also, again, with Hot Rise touring and my general performance, you know, again, with all this kind of flying around my head as far as where I find myself and all this, I think the bottom line that I should say is that I wasn't like immediately on fire to go do another one and still am not, as far as that me as an artist, songwriter, singer. I'm still extremely active as a session player and touring guy and the artist works energy, right? That's generally my balance, but it's curious to see. I put a lot of energy in kind of making that other side of me happen, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure where it's going to go from here. I'll acknowledge some unknown.
Does it feel like the last, I mean, for so many people, the last 18 months have shifted the balance? And I guess not being able to play sessions and not being able to tour, and probably I would imagine getting a huge ton more of students through Artist Works because everybody sat at home looking for things to do. Has it sort of changed your view of that balance in any way?
It's changed not from, you know, like an artist perspective of here's what I feel like I want to write or say or sing, but just as a music business professional, you know, that was the rug pulled out. I actually was planning on kind of dipping back a little bit in 2020. I had, you know, the guitar camp, a couple other festivals where I was sort of a soloist or sort of just a guest of the festival to kind of hang out and sit in with people. And, you know, had a pretty full schedule of that from, you know, spring through early fall of 2020. And then again, those just all fell like dominoes. And so it was strange. But then, yeah, Artist Works kind of really took off, basically kind of doubled in energy there, not necessarily students, but just, again, the people that were already students just were using the site more. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that has settled some, but still, still not quite back to pre-pandemic numbers. But the sessions in Nashville, that was another crazy thing because we were shut down for about 2 months completely. Studios were locked. But then once things started opening, again, because Nashville is what it is, everybody was home just as we were last year. And so it was funny, you know, it's like I probably played on more Christmas records or let's do some hymns, let's do acoustic versions of our hits, let's do a Merle Haggard tribute record. Just let's keep content going, you know, for these fans, even though we're not touring. So all the big label record cycles were put on hold, but there was still a lot of work going on in studios in Nashville.
And just on so much content, I mean, from like a sort of a fan and a consumer point of view, just being able to sit for an hour and a half and watch you do an artist takeover for Bourgeois Guitars, or like you can experience hours and hours of people's musical output without going to a gig or buying their record these days. You know, you can be a huge fan of somebody you've never actually interacted financially with. And that's probably going to be a struggle as well, because there's so much content being pumped out in the last 18 months. People expect
As when I sit back and was, you know, this time last year kind of thinking about how we might be rounding a certain corner a year ago, which we did basically as the vaccine became more and more available, and kind of saw that spring 2021 into the summer probably would equal more touring. But yeah, everybody's out in the road. So it's been curious to see how that's going to go. But, you know, so far so good. I never was, I guess I'm not like such a primary kind of performer. I don't just look at that as like, this is what I need to do all the time. So I didn't do as much of that as other people, but really happy for David Greer. I mean, I was just one of hundreds and hundreds of people around the world that would sit on the couch on Tuesday night and watch the David Greer band and loved it.
I mean, what a treat, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's the thing, to be able to, I'm in a different position in that I live over in the UK, and a lot of the big name American bluegrass musicians, financially not that viable to come over here. Particularly at the moment, but to get to see well-recorded live-streamed shows that you either paid for or you didn't, but there's suddenly things that, you know, I'm able to see that wouldn't have had a chance otherwise.
Yeah, it's I think it just speaks to a fundamental human resilience no matter what. I mean, I like to try to, in all the negatives, try to find some kind of shred of positive stuff, and, you know, David Greer is going to find a way to play. You know, that's what he does. And I'm proud of him and proud for him and happy for all of us to have been able to and continue watch him do his thing. But yeah, just I want to think that humans are going to be more resilient than not in situations like this and figure it out.
Oh, that certainly seems to have happened. We haven't had a choice, and it's some unpleasant things have come out of this, but a huge amount of maybe this is hope talking rather than anything, but just the idea that we all maybe want to connect a bit more, and we realize that some of the connection in society got a bit fragmented. We've lived through some pretty divisive times. You certainly have in your country. We certainly have in ours, to the point where we've left a continent, it divides people. But I think we have had a year or so of people going, I'm not sure we want that anymore. I think maybe realizing that we are all in the same, we're on the same team, even if we don't necessarily agree how we should be playing the game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just I tend to think about that on a global level, how a pandemic is not an American or a British or Chinese issue ultimately. It's no matter what at this point, it's a global issue. And it's just interesting to think about how every person on this planet is affected by the one same thing right now. And for better or for worse, there's we can lean toward the hopeful side that we will find more resilience and the positive stuff in that for a force togetherness than not, but we'll see.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see. I think we're going to go through a quick phase of reacting to the past 18 months. And then there's probably a third phase beyond that where everything rebalances again. But it's been an opportunity, like certainly personally, an opportunity for me. I've really reconnected with playing music in the past. There's been long periods where I haven't done it. And sort of the interesting thing of that is coming back to it and now being a parent and all sorts of other things, you realize that it all makes, all of it makes you better at all the rest of it. Being a parent makes me a better musician, which makes me a better parent, which makes me a better employee, which makes me a better runner, which makes me a better parent, which makes me, you know, it's everything. You are not a bunch of individual things. You are a collection of different ways of expressing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, my lesson through this sort of permission to not hustle last spring and summer, because I'm a hustler. I don't call myself a workaholic, but I keep things busy as a self-employed person. And so when all that stopped, it was sort of disconcerting for a while, but it was a good lesson for me. And I've actually borrowed from that this year, knowing kind of how busy this year was, up to basically July, mid-July, and with the Bela Fleck tour kind of on the heels here of that starting in a couple of weeks, I made a commitment that I've never done in my whole life as a professional session player, which is basically to shut down. I sort of quarantined myself from Nashville through the month of August here. And it's been good. It was scary because I've never done it. But it just felt like I needed that time. I needed to just decompress a bit and again prepare for the touring that's coming up. And so that was good. That was a bit of that lesson, the kind of like you say, of just what's going to ultimately make me a better husband, father, musician, teacher, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, taking the time I need for me is something that usually doesn't happen, but that was the exercise in August, and it's worked.
Oh, that's good to hear. With the teaching, does there reach a point? Will there reach a tipping point where there are more students than you can respond to? Because the amount of work you put in and the amount of responses I see coming onto the site every day, it's not a simple task.
It is not. You know, there are more people on the site than submit, and you just never know. Historically, with that sort of format, there is a certain kind of predictable percentage of people that will kind of feel like, okay, these are, you know, really engaged users using 100% of what that site can offer. And maybe that percentage is around 10, and that's generally pretty manageable. But again, it kind of ebbs and flows. Right now it's up. And the best way I can kind of describe that is again, it's just something that as it's grown, I've had to just involve that into my just general maintenance and balance of life. I mean, I have to give that time each week. I don't want to get behind. And so it's always changing, but it's never felt not manageable. It's never felt oppressive as far as like, oh, I got to do these again. And I think too, I mean, for me, I've tried to just always lock into this attitude, like every chance I get to sit in front of a camera and talk to somebody about, you know, tone or groove or Whiskey Before Breakfast or improvisation or a G run is an opportunity that, and again, I wanted that. And I still feel that just like when I step on stage and play music, I one of my goals for myself is to notice joy and notice what's potentially joyful about any of these situations. And I really love artist works and I love doing it. And the more I can tap into that, even the weeks where there's a lot, again, I enjoy that opportunity to just go there with folks. And if anything, it kind of makes me more willing to have some of those difficult discussions with folks, to one of your questions earlier of how you sort of broach certain subjects that might be tricky or whatever. You know, I'm committed, and I'm not going to like halfway do it. And so if not halfway doing it means, you know, having hard conversations. I remember a few years ago with a particular student where for whatever reason, we got way deep into the, like, what are your fears? And, you know, what are these, you know, not just about the lack of knowledge of the fretboard, but just, you know, some of the real human, you know, stuff. And that was one of the first times that happened. I'm like, oh wow, we're really pushing some buttons here beyond just, you know, here's a D scale that's starting at the 10th fret. And that was, you know, it was interesting. Just like, wow, this is a real conversation, and it's good. Anyway, all that to say, I mean, that's maintaining that kind of focus and attitude is something that I try to do. You know,
I think
be willing, committed, be you know, always recognize the joy in it.
And I think that's maybe a beautiful place to kind of wind things up, because that's a sentiment that we can take into life. Though the idea, I think life gets busy, and life is busy, and life is complicated these days, and there's so many decisions to make on a daily basis that it's so easy to not see the joy and to see the one cloud that covers the sun and think that's the weather. And
yeah,
and it's a hard thing to stop and go, I'm going to go into this positive, looking for some joy, and I will find some. And I think that's, you know, a lovely thing to aim for. So if people want to hear a bit more about Artist Works, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Well, the website is artistworks.com. I think if just Google Artist Works and my name, Brian with a Y, it should take you right there. And there's
great.
there's always a sale. So
I've noticed there's always a sale. I'll stick a link in the show notes so people can click straight through to that as well. Is there anything else you've got going on you want to promote? I know obviously the Baylor tool's coming up. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge focus for me right now. Again, as far as my primary musical outlet will be touring with him starting in mid-September. It's all in the States. All the dates are on baylafleck.com. And so far, they're all still there, and that's good. But there's a batch, the touring, it's really cool. You know, it's Sierra Hole and Michael Cleveland and Justin Moses, Mark Schatz, and Baylor and myself. And then in the fall, or later in the year, late fall, November into December, is Edgar Meyer and Sam Bush and Jerry Douglas and Stuart Duncan with Baylor and I. And basically, what does that Telluride house band? And it's what's fun about that is we only do like one gig a year. And so this is actually, you know, a whole tour. And I'm really looking forward to that.
I mean, there's two fun bands to be in for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. That's why I, you know, hopefully things will maintain, or the tour schedule will maintain itself as we go. You know, I'm not trying to prepare myself if things get canceled or adjust in some dramatic way, but so far so good.
Great. Well, good luck with the tour. I hope you enjoy it. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this. It's been a joy chatting to you. And hopefully, if everybody else enjoys listening half as much as I've enjoyed doing it, then they're going to have a great time.
Cool. Thanks, Matt. And congratulations to you. It's really cool to see, you know, just all your inclusion in the site and creating the podcast. And you know, you're, what you've done, as you say, you felt maybe not ready for it or qualified. But, you know, if there's a beautiful thing about togetherness and community is that there generally is a spot for everybody. And you just got to jump in. And that's the good thing about bluegrass is that, you know, whether it's a Facebook group or Artist Works or a bluegrass jam, I mean, it's community. It's people doing things together, and you're providing a cool opportunity for you and a lot of other people. And that's really neat to see.
There we have it. I hope you enjoyed that. It was, yeah, as I say, a joy to be part of that. And I can't thank Brian enough for taking the time to do it. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to also go and check out the interviews I did with Marcel Ardanz of Lessons with Marcel, which was brilliant, and Jake Eddy of the Becky Buller Band, both on the podcast already, so go and check those out. I'll stick links in the show notes to all the stuff we talked about, not just Brian's course at Artist Works, but if you're a banjo player, dobro player, bass player, fiddle player, mandolin player, there's some great teachers on there for you as well, like Sierra Hull, Michael Daves, Noam Pekelny, Mike Marshall. I mean, the list of people playing, teaching you to play instruments on Artist Works is sort of phenomenal. So I'll stick links to all the different courses so you can go and check those out too. I will link to the Everyone Loves Guitar interview that Brian did that I mentioned as well, because I think that's a really cool listen just about his sort of life story, how he got into bluegrass, what his journey was. And rather than just repeat all that here, I thought it'd just be cool for you to go and listen to that, because that's also a great podcast. And that's it. Hopefully I will have some more exciting interviews for you sooner than the 200th episode. That's definitely the plan. I'm lining some up now as we speak. But the first 100 episodes have been a blast, and I'm looking forward to the next. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy picking. Bluegrass Jamalong is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, making some of the finest guitars and mandolins in the world since the 1970s. Visit collingsguitars.com and find out why.